Have you ever been there when someone takes their last breath? It is a sobering moment. In the times that I've experienced and seen, death have been for me a combination of a sacred moment that's terrifying, it's lonely, it's electric, it's sobering. You don't forget watching someone die. And you don't forget being in the room when life exits. It wakes you up. And whatever other emotions are there running through the moment, maybe it's gratitude, maybe it's grief, the sober reality of witnessing someone die is something that you become keenly aware that you're witnessing a moment that's going to happen to you. And the reality is there's a million ways to die, but the experience, the process, if there is one, shares some commonalities. And all of these commonalities Jesus underwent himself, and I want to face those this morning, head into the darkness a bit, because death, no matter the experience or process, represents pain, helplessness, and mystery. Let us face perhaps one of the most obvious aspects of death, the pain. So many elements of pain associated with death, I dare not dwell too long on any of them. And when I speak of the pain of death, of course, there's the obvious physical torment of that, be that the kind of immediate pain we see with Jesus on the cross, just simply wanting something to drink, or the longer drawn-out pain of physical decay that can happen over years. So yes, there's physical pain, but perhaps even more tormenting is the pain of having to say goodbye. The pain of losing those we love. We see this on the cross as Jesus dies, him saying goodbye to his mother, goodbye to his best friend. And we see him exhorting them, take care of one another. His hope on the cross is that they'll find a way to take care of one another. They'll find a way to manage without him. And of course, that's our pain in death as well. The pain of hoping, but not knowing that our children will be all right. There's a pain of saying goodbye to perhaps our siblings who have perhaps traveled with us the entirety of our lives, our friends who have given perhaps life a rich texture to it. And Jesus feels that pain too. And then, of course, there's the pain of death that comes with unfinished stories. Jesus knows this pain. Even as he dies, 11 of his closest friends and followers had completely abandoned him. He dies estranged from Judas. He dies estranged from Peter, estranged from many others. He dies not knowing reconciliation. He dies with this thing between them. His story with some of his closest friends is incomplete. He dies with that pain, a pain I think many of us will perhaps know ourselves, the pain of a story that's incomplete. Perhaps it's being estranged from an ex, a child, a friend, a sibling, maybe even a parent. And you know, I think under the best conditions, if all things go really great, we live a long and we live a peaceful life with no mistakes along the way, I suppose. But even then, death robs us of what is most precious to us, relationships with those we love. And the reality is we're human, and like Jesus, we probably don't die all the time under the best of conditions. We often die too young, too full of potential. We die without living out the full potential of our lives, without finishing our bucket lists. We so often die not having finished the stories that our lives begin. And I think when we consider that the Christian faith considers death an enemy, we have to look at it much more richly. Death robs us of finishing our stories. It robs us of potential. It robs us of our relationships. And on one hand, this sobering reality should drive us to gratitude for every single moment we have. The impermanency of life, it should move us to just gratitude. And yet, it doesn't mean denying the very real pain that death inflicts on all of us. Death has a sting to it. It's hard. It's painful. And it leaves death awake and a stain of pain. And as Jesus dies, he enters into all of that. You know, I think we just need to be more honest in facing the reality of death. Culturally, we have this neurosis. around avoiding death and its pain. It's, culturally, we sort of insist on whistling past the graveyard. Where in our minds, we know the reality of death's pain, but we want to evade it and avoid it. But the Christian path, it takes us straight into the pit of darkness, into death, and says, look around, stare at it, face it. Christian path insists we can be honest about our own fears around death, because if we don't face it, our faith becomes like just a placebo. And so on Good Friday, we are coaxed to look very deeply into the face of death, to face it. And I believe herein lies one of the rules of the church, to take us into the pain we experience around death the way a midwife brings a mother in and through the pain of childbirth. Came across this quote from Brian Zahn this week. It got my mind whirling with images and stories. He says this, in terms of pain, especially facing the pain of death, the church is not an epidural, the church is a midwife. The role is not to anesthetize us to the pain we experience around death, but to be present with us in that pain, to remind us it's supposed to hurt. And to hold our hands, remind us of that, and perhaps tell us it's going to be worth it. The church plays the role of midwife, not epidural. I love that imagery. Might not be appropriate for this morning, but I can't help but think of my own stories with birth. I don't remember who it was, but one of them, we're driving, Kristen and I had talked, is she going to get an epidural before, and we didn't know, you know, like maybe, I don't know. We're driving, she's in severe labor, she's in a lot of pain, and it's starting to get testy, I hit bumps, and she's, why you got to drive? And finally she blurts out, I need an epidural right now, I want you to call the hospital, I want you to call the doctor, have the epidural ready. I said, I can't make phone calls while I'm driving, honey, you know, that wouldn't be safe. And she's like, no, seriously, you need to call and have the epidural ready. And it's not like there's an epidural hotline, right? You know, hey, can I get an epidural with a side of fries? I'll be right there. And we get to the hospital. We go into the delivery room. She's dilated too much. She can't get an epidural. It's too far gone at this point. And she's in pain, and she's crying out, I can't do this, I can't do this. And to be honest, I was on her side. I didn't think she could either. I'm like, Doc, I don't think so. I think she's right. I don't think she's got it in her. It was useless. And there's the nurses holding her hand. You got this. You got this. You're about to meet your baby. I don't care. I can't do this. I can't do this. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Another birth. Remember, we were in the delivery room, and labor's weird because the contractions come and then they subside. You got like 5-minute rest, and Kristen was deep into labor pains, and I was standing behind her, rubbing her back. It's okay. And her water hadn't broke, but at that moment it broke all over my shoes. And I was so disgusted by that, but Kristen's contraction stopped. We had a moment of reprieve, and the problem with labor is it can go on for a while. You run out of things to talk about. It's like you've talked anyway. And so I said to her, listen, I don't want to talk about this right now. I just want to sort of table this for a future of agenda. But should I throw my shoes out? Like, I don't... Like, I don't know what to do with them. And she just looked at me, and I don't want to talk. I do I wash them? What do I do? And she just gave me this look like, you're an imbecile. And I was, and I was just like, oh, I'm sorry, but I don't know what to do with this mess. And I think that's what all of us experience when we're around the pain of death. It's uncomfortable. It's so messy. We don't want to be there. We don't want the messiness, the ugliness that pain brings. We don't want to walk around in those shoes, do we? But the church is not an epidural. It's a midwife to our pain. And the role of the church is not to anesthetize us to the pain of death, but to be present in the pain and remind us it's supposed to hurt. But that maybe it's going to be worth it. Church plays the role of midwife, not epidural. And so we have to go into that pain, because here's the thing, today is Friday. And yes, Sunday's coming, but resurrection only means something if death means something. And so we want to stare at death. And one of the things about death is it's quite simply pain. And if Jesus' resurrection saves us from anything, if it saves us from death, then we have to acknowledge the pain of death. For the one dying, the pain of those left behind. You know, up near Kristen's cottage, there's two lakes, and there's a narrow channel way between these two lakes. And it's shallow and narrow, and so you have to go through there slow with a boat. But everywhere there are signs, no wake. Do not make any wake. They're trying to keep the shorelines from eroding. No wake. Don't make any ripples behind you. Go so slow. Don't make any wake. And it's interesting to me, because with death and with pain, there's always a wake. There's always pain around that. And the sorrow and pain associated with death in our world are everywhere. And it's often just hidden out of sight. But it leaves a mark and it leaves a stain on all that it touches. If you look around at people, you can sometimes see it in their eyes. You know, one of the things Kristen and I are trying to learn is to be careful sometimes, because Kristen and I are very fortunate right now that both sets of our parents are alive, and they live very close, and they help take care of our kids often. And what we're learning is that can sometimes be a really painful reminder to other people of what death has robbed them of. And so you can be out on a Friday night. Hey, who's taking your care of your kids? Well, the parents, they just live down the street. It's great. They're right there. It's awesome. And you can see sometimes right in people's eyes that it's a reminder of what death has stolen from them. How wonderful it would be to have parents alive living close to you. Or our three-year-old Evie, I've told you the story of our neighbor who lost their son, 2 years old, and Evie's right around that age. And of course, she's so full of life. And for our neighbors right now, you can see it in people's eyes sometimes. Every time you tell a story about your three-year-old, every time they see Evie, it's a reminder of what death stole from them. And so the wake and stain of death, it's everywhere, sometimes just hiding behind people's eyes. Death is pain. It stained virtually all of us in some way with grief and sorrow, and there's a cost when we try to avoid this. Avoiding that pain, I think it debilitates it. It numbs our souls. And if we insist on avoiding the pain of death, then the comfort of resurrection will mean little or nothing to us. But if we stare at death, allow its stain in the wake of its sorrow and grief, if we allow that to sort of carve some depth into our souls, then Sunday is truly something to behold. Because Easter only means something if death means something. And pain and death means pain. Resurrection does not erase death, it follows it. Resurrection does not erase pain, it follows it. And realizing this is the only way to appreciate resurrection. Death's stain is the pain it inflicts. And Jesus experiences all of that. But pain is just one of death's friends. There's more. Death hurts, but death also renders us helpless. You know, there's a fascinating thing in the book of Luke. I didn't even see it till this year. It's amazing to me sometimes how Scripture keeps revealing things to you if you keep looking. And I'd never seen this till now, but it's remarkable to me. Notice Luke's narrative around Jesus' birth. It says this in Luke 2. Mary, of course, she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger. And of course, the whole point of incarnation in Jesus' birth story is to highlight the absolute helplessness of God in the incarnation. It helps highlight for us how hopelessly helpless God is as a baby. unless the experience, the universal experience of birth, this universal helplessness. And that's why I find this report of Jesus' burial so fascinating. In Luke 23, there was a good and righteous man named Joseph who went to Pilate, asked for the body of Jesus. Then he took it down, wrapped it in a linen cloth, and laid it in a rock-hewn tomb where no one had been laid. Parallels are, they're like impossible to miss. As in birth, now in death, we're never more helpless than at our birth and at our death. Jesus is born wrapped in linen cloth, laid in a manger. As he dies, he's wrapped in linen cloth and laid in a tomb. And I love the way art sort of can bring these moments alive. I'm a huge fan of Caravaggio and Rubens, and they both have, this is the Entombment of Christ by Caravaggio, the second wrapping of Jesus. And the next slide is Rubens' portrait of Jesus dying or dead, coming down from the cross, being wrapped in linen, being wrapped in the helplessness. The experience Jesus had at birth of helplessness is now the same experience he has in death. As for him, so for us. And death, no matter what else we might say about it, it returns us to the helplessness of our birth. And whether death is quick or a long drawn out process, death exposes us humans for what we really are in the universe: helpless. And that's a terrifying thought. We fear death not only because of its finality, but because death has many friends. One of them is helplessness. A couple years ago, I was in a writing group, and one of the men in the writing group, he shared a story, a very intimate, raw story about his father, who's in his 90s, and this man who's in his 50s, having to take care of his father, and the very first time he had to help his father wipe himself after using the bathroom. And the way he told the story was incredibly raw. There was very little romance in it. Of course, he reflected on the absolute circle of life, I suppose, this idea, this moment of the man who once changed my diapers, I'm now responsible for cleaning him up. But the way he told it, just, it was so raw, talking about the shame and embarrassment by his father and having to ask for help from his son, and his son's sense of shame and embarrassment. Who wants to do that for their father? Death makes us helpless. And for some, our autonomy is taken from us quickly. For others, the process is long. Perhaps it starts with losing our ability to drive. You can't see well now. You have to take your license from you. Our ability to take care of ourselves, to clean ourselves, to use the bathroom by ourselves. Death just doesn't take just our life. It first robs us of our autonomy, our ability as adults to take care of ourselves. And of course, I think there's probably lessons and virtues in this. In our helplessness, there's a sobering reality. It's got a power to teach us something. Even still, it's scary. And why wouldn't it be scary? Being helpless is terrifying. And Jesus walks right into that. Helpless. Full humanity of Jesus on display here. In his death, he becomes helpless as a baby. And I find that moving, that Jesus enters into the full experience of what it means to be human. And so whatever it means to die, whatever it means to do death, Jesus has experienced that. And on the cross, Jesus dies helpless. He's walked the path ahead of us and known the helplessness of death. And in knowing its pain, knowing its helplessness, Jesus takes his last breath and also enters into death's mystery. I think we do a little bit of a disservice, right, if we don't talk about death as a great mystery, a profound mystery. I think we all love mystery. We love how mystery tantalizes us by keeping secrets from us just out of reach. But I think part of the reason we love mystery is because we know that somewhere, like the X-Files back in the day, the truth is out there somewhere. You just have to find it. And so we love mystery, we love the unknown, the thrill of the chase, the pursuit, but at the end of the day, we want answers, right? I don't know. I don't know why I think about these things, because it's an impossibility for me to be the president of the United States. That's just impossible. But I sometimes think, what would I do if I was president? And I think about this too much. It's weird. But I'm like, after the hoopla, you know, first day in office, you got to dance and probably sign some bill. You sold your soul saying you would write into power. Your first day is a write-off. But I've often thought my second day will kick everyone out of the Oval Office, there on my own. And the first thing I'd do is I'd pick up the phone and say, I want top CIA guy, whoever that is, and get him on the phone and be like, listen, I'm president. Tomorrow I want a briefing on my desk stat. About what? I want to know all the mysteries. Tell me everything you know about UFOs, JFK's assassination, the Russian Dyatlov Pass incident. Do we know anything about time travel? Ghosts? Sasquatch? Is Bigfoot a reality? I want all the mysteries. I want a briefing on my desk. Tell me everything there is to know. I find mysteries tantalizing. I love them. The thing is this, while we love the unknown, the thrill of the chase, again, it's because we believe there's an answer out there. I mean, how many of you following perhaps Game of Thrones in its final season, how many of you are going to, right before the final episode, be like, I'm just going to leave it there. Like the mystery. I don't need to know what happens. Of course not. I want to know. Or some of you following playoff sports right now, imagine it comes down to Game 7, and you're just like, I'm going to tune out. I want to keep it a mystery who wins. None of us do. We want to know how it ends. That's the allure of mystery. We love mystery so long as we believe there's an answer. There must be an answer. But death is the great mystery because it will not reveal its secrets. It won't surrender its mystery. And no one has come back from the dead to give us the answer, except to one person, but I'm getting ahead of myself. But death is the great mystery. Because no matter how confident we are in our beliefs, no matter how sure we are of our convictions, we just don't know. And we can't know until we travel that path. I remember one writer was writing about his father passing. I love this line. He said, my father's now one step closer to knowing. No matter what we believe about death, none of us know or can be sure what happens on the other side. It's such a great mystery. And the truth is that we have to wrestle with it could be nothing. It could be lights out, done, finished, gone. Very well could be. And even within the Christian tradition alone, there are various thoughts and ideas. Do we soul sleep? Do we lay unconscious for centuries, millennia? Do we face some kind of purgatory? Do we face some sort of kind of disembodied state in heaven? Culturally, there are theories out there. One of the more fascinating theories I love, just because I think it's weird to think about, is that you relive your life in chunks, which I think would be both heaven and hell. So you relive your life, and it's a fascinating theory to me. You relive your life in chunks. So let's say you spent 10 years of your life watching sports. You would spend 10 years watching sports in a row, no sleep, nothing. And for some of you, you'd be like, that would be amazing. But then it's followed by 3 years of doing dishes, 2 years of laundry. Maybe you get 2 years of sex. I don't know, but you live all your life over again in chunks. It's fascinating to me. Maybe we exist without a body. Maybe like Sartre, imagine we spend eternity with the people who annoy us most. We just don't know. Maybe. Theories abound in culture, traditions all over the world. The reality is none of us know. None of us can know what's on the other side of death for sure. It's a mystery. It's a place we all enter alone. It's shrouded in secrecy. And I believe so it was for Jesus. He lifts his head toward God. He's finished what he set out to do. There's nothing left for Jesus to do but die. And as he dies, he enters the great unknown. He enters a place that no one has come back from. He breathes his last and enters the mystery. So it'll be with us. We're all going to face that mystery, and that's scary. And of course, there's so much more we could say about death and death's friends, but suffice it for this morning to simply know that some of the commonalities of death are that it represents pain, helplessness, mystery. And I think only when we've stared into that, properly wrestled with that, can we fully appreciate Jesus' final cry from the cross. Only when we've stared into the abyss that is death can we come to see the daring, the bold, the beautiful words that Jesus leaves us with in a very fresh way. On the cross, Jesus enters into the fullness of death. He breathes his last. He knows the helplessness of death. He's known the pain, the sorrow, the grief. As he breathes his last, he enters into the great mystery of death. He enters into its shroud of secrecy, its mystery. He goes fully into the depths of death. And as he takes his final breath, he cries out, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." And these words, for me, are quite simply words of surrender and trust. Surrender and trust. Entering the jaws of the great dragon that is death, Jesus surrenders. He trusts in a vision that he cannot see, as he enters into death's darkness. And in that final moment, Jesus has finished it all. He's revealed to us what God is like. He's forgiven his enemies. He's followed the course all the way to death. All that's left to do is die. One final act, die. But how? How to die? Racked with pain, sorrow, completely helpless, into the mystery he goes. How to die? With his final breath, with surrender and trust. "There's nothing more I can do, God. I die helpless, alone, in pain, in sorrow, and I'm trusting it all to you." And so he places his trust and surrenders himself to the hands of God, entrusting that his fate is in the hands of something greater than death itself. He can't see what lies beyond, but he has faith in the vision that God has given him, and now he dies with vision over and beyond what is visible in the moment. Oh, Jesus, but that I would have your courage. Help me in my unbelief. I find something very profound here, but so out of reach for me. Scripture speaks of losing our fear of death, but that is not yet my reality. I am terrified of death. It scares me. I don't like thinking about it too long. And at this point in my life, I can only see death through the lens of a dirty thief, a thief that steals life and vitality and love and relationships. And I don't know, perhaps as I age, I'll come to know death in a more complex way. Perhaps I'll come to see it as an agent of mercy. Who knows? But even then, I can only see death as like an agent of mercy because of how much it robs of us before it gives us mercy. It takes and takes and takes. And sure, perhaps at the end it feels like mercy, but only because it's robbed us of so much already. I'm terrified of being helpless. Terrified of being alone. Terrified of the mystery. I'm scared of death's pain. I'm scared of the sorrow, the grief. I fear it. And I don't know if I'm alone, but don't we all fear it to some degree? You know, I find it interesting the terminology we use around illness and disease. Upon prognosis, we often use the words of what? Battle. Fight. I'm going to fight this. And of course we should. Life is worth fighting for, but there's something there that intrigues me. We only fight what we're afraid of. And so we fight at death. Each of us in our own way, we're diagnosed with something potentially fatal. We do battle. Fight it. We exercise, clinging to the hope, maybe I can make my body a better weapon when the fight comes. or we distract ourselves. More TV, more Netflix, hoping maybe if what I ignore, maybe the things I ignore won't catch up with me. So we fight death. But we see something different here with Jesus that I find compelling. He just surrenders in trust. He enters into the fullness of death and simply trusts God. Trust that death is not the end, but a birth into the hands of a loving God. And so he dies in trust. So it was for him, may it be for us in all the ways we die in this world. From the small emotional deaths we experience to the big death, the death of our literal cells, our bodies, there comes a point in any death when all you can do, your only choice left is to surrender in trust or die fighting the inevitable. There comes a point in any death where your only choice left is surrender or fight. For some of us, in terms of faith, for some of us, believing and deciding to follow the Christian path can feel like a death. There's so many mysteries, so many hurts and wounds and doubts. But there comes a point, maybe, when you've asked all the questions, you've wrestled with all the doubts, you've screamed at God, you've asked God why you feel abandoned. You ask God why death, why faith feels like dying, why the church hurts so much, but there comes a point. Do you keep fighting or do you just surrender and trust? In terms of our physical death, there comes a point, should we be given a dying process, we wrestle with the reality, first the shock, maybe denial, anger, grief, sorrow, sadness after it all. We fight. Can we surrender into the arms of love? Can we surrender and trust that what we fall into at death is not a void, but the hands of love that are bigger and better than death? Jesus dies trusting his fate to God in the hands of love. I pray for that same spirit of surrender when my time comes in this body, but also for the millions of little ways I'm going to have to die before that. May we learn that. Surrender and trust. As the band comes this morning to close, I want to leave you with a song that has meant much to me, and we had a funny little conversation here. Everyone's sick of you too, I get it. But I'm old enough, I just don't think I care anymore. And you know, this song, for me, I always put it on in the hard times, you know? Whenever you're faced with the death of something in life, it's the song I go to. In the first verse, he speaks so powerfully, I think, about the surrender and trust in death that comes in marriage. And we could use some reminding of that. The bold and audacious act of dying to ourselves in marriage and love. In the second verse, he talks about being an addict and being completely broken and finding a moment of surrender. In the final verse, he talks about the surrender of faith and life and death. The song speaks of moments of surrender. There's moments where you surrender and trust in a vision that you cannot see. Vision over visibility. And that's what Jesus does here on the cross. He enters the void of death. Jesus surrenders and trusts a vision that's no longer visible to him. He enters the void of death and he surrenders and trusts with these final words, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." May we, over the course of our lives, learn to pray that prayer as he did. This is moment of surrender. in the darkest moments of life, the darkest moments perhaps of our relationships where we can't see a way out, may we learn to surrender to love. And when we think hope is gone for our relationships, may we surrender ourselves and trust to love. When we face a million little deaths through life, when we're asked to surrender ourselves to something greater than ourselves, may we trust in that love. And may we, like Jesus, when our final moments come and things are looking dark and there's no way to see what's beyond and what is next, may we learn to trust and surrender ourselves into the arms of love, into the arms of God. And with that, now we wait. We wait in our darkness for Sunday. Like the line said, so many people just counting down till the pain stops. We wait in our darkness. And so as you go from here this morning, if you need silence, if you need a place to process something this morning, there's no rush because we don't have to clean up the chairs this morning. Take your time. Do what you need. Stare into your own darkness if you need. But may we learn to surrender and trust. Now we wait in darkness until Sunday. Let me pray. God, teach us surrender and trust. Comfort us in our fears. Allow us to know that fear is not unnatural, that it's okay to fear pain, helplessness, mystery. Be with us in that fear and teach us through your Spirit constantly to learn surrender and trust. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Go in peace.